ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Chapter 5 is entitled Lord Rishabhdev's Teachings. Today we are on text 26.
Sarvani madrishna taya bhavati.
Sarvani madrishna taya bhavati.
Sarvani madrishna taya bhavati. Charani bhutani suta dhruvani.
Charani
bhutani suta dhruvani. Sambhavityani pade padevo.
Vivitta
dribhi stadhu harhanam me. Sarvani madrishyataya bhavati. Charani bhutani suta dhruvani. Sambhavitavyani pade padevo. Vivitta dribhi stadhu harhanam me. Sarvani madrishyataya bhavati. Charani bhutani suta dhruvani. Sambhavitavyani pade padevo. Vivitta dribhi stadhu harhanam me.
Sarvani madrishyataya bhavati.
Sarvani madrishyataya bhavati.
Charani bhutani suta dhruvani.
Charani bhutani suta dhruvani.
Sambhavitavyani pade padevo.
Sambhavitavyani pade padevo.
Vivitta dribhi stadhu harhanam me.
Vivitta dribhi stadhu harhanam me.
Sarvani madrishyataya bhavati.
Sarvani madrishyataya bhavati.
Charani
bhutani suta dhruvani. Charani Vitavyani pade padevo.
Vivitta
dribhi stadhu harhanam me. Sarvani.
Sarvani.
All.
All.
Madrishyataya.
Madrishyataya.
Because of being my sitting place. Bhavati.
Bhavati.
Vayu. Charani. That moon. Bhutani, living entities. Sitaha, my dear sons. Dhruvani, that do not move. Sambhavitavyani, be respected. Pade pade, at every moment. Va, vayu. Vivitta dribhi, possessing clear vision and understanding that the Supreme Personality of Godhead in His Paramatma feature is situated everywhere.
Possessing clear vision and understanding that the Supreme Personality of Godhead in His Paramatma feature is situated everywhere.
Tatu,
that indirectly.
Ha, certainly.
Arhanam,
offering respect.
Offering respect.
Me,
unto me.
Unto me.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. My dear sons, you should not envy any living entity, be he moving or non-moving. Knowing that I am situated in them, you should offer respect to all of them at every moment. In this way, you offer respect to me. Purport. In this way, verse, the word vivikta gripli, meaning without envy, is used. All living entities are the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in His Paramatma feature. As confirmed in Brahma Samhita, Andantarastham Paramanu Chayantarastham, the Lord is situated in this universe as Garbhu Dakshai Vishnu and Shiva Dakshai Vishnu. He is also situated within every atom. According to the Vedic statement, Isha Vasya Nigam Sarvam, the Supreme Lord is situated everywhere, and wherever He is situated is His temple. We even offer respects to a temple from a distant place, and all living entities should similarly be offered respect. This is different from the theory of pantheism, which holds that everything is God. Everything has a relationship with God because God is situated everywhere. We should not make any particular distinction between the poor and the rich, like the foolish worshippers of Daridra Narayan. Narayan is present in the rich as well as the poor. One should not simply think Narayan is situated among the poor. He is everywhere. An advanced devotee will offer respects to everyone, even to cats and dogs. Vidya Vinaya Sambharne Brahmane Hari Hastini Shuni Chaiva Shvapakrecha Pandita Sama Darshana. The humble sage, by virtue of true knowledge, sees with equal vision a learned and gentle Brahmana, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater, an outcast. Bhagavad Gita 5.18. This Samadarshana, equal vision, should not be mistaken to mean that the individual is the same as the Supreme Lord. They are always distinct. Every individual person is different from the Supreme Lord. It is a mistake to equate the individual living entity with the Supreme Lord on the plea of Vivikta Drik, Samadrik. The Lord is always in an exalted position, even though He agrees to live everywhere. Srila Madhavacharya, quoting Padma Puran, states Vivikta Drishti Jivanam Dishnataya Parameshwarasya Bheda Drishti. One who has clear vision and who is devoid of envy can see that the Supreme Lord is separate from all living entities, although He is situated in every living entity. Madhavacharya further quotes from Padma Puran. Upapadaye Paramatmanam Jivebhyo Ya Pade Pade Bheda Naiva Chaitasmat Priyo Vishnosu Kashtana. One who sees the living entity and the Supreme Lord as always distinct is very dear to the Lord. Padma Puran also states, Yo Hares Chaiva Jivana Veda Vakta Hare Priyaha. One who preaches that the living entities are separate from the Supreme Lord is very dear to Lord Vishnu. ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं मुखं करोति वाचालं पङ्गुं लङ्घयते गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वन्दे श्रीगुरुदीनतारिणं वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण. So we are continuing the discussion of Lord Rishabhdev's teachings. He is continuing to instruct his sons, which he started at the beginning of this chapter. So we saw in the previous chapter, in the fourth chapter, that Rishabhdev had 100 sons, out of which Bharat Maharaj, or Bharat, was the eldest. And he was such an exalted king as well as a devotee of the Lord that the entire Bharat Varsh was named after him. So all these sons, Prabhupada explains at the end of the previous chapter, that they were very exalted. Some of them were highly exalted sages, some of them were Kshatriyas or the Raj Rishi. So all of them were God conscious sons. However, still they are sitting down humbly and they are listening to the instructions which their father, Lord Rishabhdev, who is again none other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is giving them. So there are some very beautiful verses in this particular chapter. Like when we were studying our course with Vishwaprabhu, we had quite a few KMVs, KMV verses from this chapter. So we saw the famous verse a few verses ago, which was Guru Na Sasyat verse, where Rishabhdev is telling his sons, one should not become a guru, one should not become a father, a mother, or a worshipable demigod, or a relative who cannot deliver their dependence. We also saw the verse where Rishabhdev is instructing his sons about the importance of the human form of life and how, you know, people are completely not utilizing it properly. And that verse was Nayam Deho Deho Prijam Na Loke Kashtan Kaman. Like people are just engaged in hard work like dogs and asses. So that was another verse we saw. The importance of detachment from sex life. That was also an important verse we saw. Pumsastriya Mithuni Bhava Netan. That also verse we saw in the instruction. So the instructions of Rishabhdev are actually meant for us, for the conditioned living entities in this Kali Yuga. Because those sons were extremely self-realized. They were already detached, they already knew what is the goal of human form of life. All of them knew what is the position of the Vedas. But still they are sitting and hearing carefully because, like, you know, we see in the Bhagavad Gita also, Krishna is speaking to Arjuna actually for the benefit of all living entities who will come in the future. So that is what these instructions are for. They are for the benefit of all of us who are struggling in this material world. So among the instructions, we see that Rishabhdev is also talking about the importance of brahmanas. Like a couple of verses ago, he was talking about how brahmanas should be worshipped and how his son should carefully cultivate the habit of respecting, offering all respects to brahmanas and worshipping them because they are very exalted and they are very dear to Vishnu. He also spoke about the importance of Vedas and how, you know, Vedas should not be rejected, how Vedas are so important that his son should pursue the study of Vedas and also preach Vedas to others. So that was one more instruction he gave, apart from the importance of the human form of life, how not to waste it like asses and dogs do, but, you know, utilize it for the purpose for which the human form, the body, has been given to human beings. He also talks about quite a few verses that are based on detachment. How to become detached from this material life and how to attach yourself to the lotus feet of Lord Krishna and, you know, to the aspects of devotional service. So overall, if we study these teachings very carefully, they will definitely help us progress on the path of devotional service. Because they are coming from the mouth of Rishabhdev, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he is enunciating that, yes, worship the Supreme Lord. Like he talks clearly about, I worship me, like that. So he is declaring that he is the worshipable Lord. And he is giving the path also, the goal and the process, both he is giving through his instructions in this chapter. So in today, coming to today's verse 26, which we just read, there are two themes we can see which are coming out from the verse as well as from the purport which Prabhupada has given. So one theme is how envy of living entities is envy of God. That is one theme we can see. Prabhupada is talking about the quality of envy which can actually lead to the fall down of a living entity and which has led to our fall down from the spiritual world. So we'll discuss a little bit about that, and it will not help us, and you know how we should view and respect everyone equally. So therefore Prabhupada quotes the verse Pandita Samadarshina, that a person who is self-realized, who is free from envy, will be able to give all respects to every living entity because he will see the Paramatma in everybody. So that is one aspect Prabhupada is talking about, envy towards living entities, and if we have that envy, how it is an expression of envy towards God. And the second theme which we see over here is the theme of which Prabhupada's favorite theme, which is, you know, Prabhupada uses every opportunity to talk about Mayavadi philosophy. So that is the second theme we see over here, and therefore Prabhupada is quoting Madhvacharya. Because Madhvacharya was a very strong proponent, he was a very strong preacher against Mayavad philosophy. So that is the second theme we see over here, where Prabhupada is stressing through the purport and quoting verses from Padma Puran, which Madhvacharya has quoted, that one who sees Lord and us as the same, and one who sees that yes, the goal of our life is to become one with God, they are actually also expressing envy of the God. And one who actually preaches that God and living entities are separate and the purpose is to serve God, they are actually very dear to Vishnu. So Prabhupada also talks about the scheme of Mayavad and how that is also an expression of envy to the God. So these are the two themes that are coming over here. So speaking about the first theme, Prabhupada is saying that, and even in the translation, Nishabdev is saying that, my dear sons, you should not envy any living entity, whether he is moving or non-moving. Knowing that I am situated in them, you should offer all respects to every living entity. So we see the famous verse in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna speaks to Arjuna, the famous verse, Bhoktaram Yajya Tapasam, Sarva Loka Maheshwaram, Suridam Sarva Bhutanam, Yatma Mam Shanti Mrityati. This verse is often quoted by Srila Prabhupada when he talks about envy and when he talks about the peace formula of this world. So there are three themes over here, and you know Krishna tells Arjuna before he speaks this verse in the earlier chapters, Krishna tells Arjuna that your qualification to hear the Bhagavad Gita from me is that you are completely free from envy. You are not envious of anybody, and that is why I am considering you as the right patram to impart this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita. So we know in that battlefield, the Kauravas and the Pandavas were facing each other, and on the other side, we had Duryodhan, who was leading the Kaurava army, and Duryodhan is considered actually an epitome of envy. The whole Mahabharata, if we see, the whole scripture is based on Duryodhan's envy. How at every step, even though he was getting so much, you know, privilege because he was utilizing his father's weakness to get all these privileges in life, but even then, he had so much envy of the Pandavas at every stage in life. Whether they had, you know, he gave them that barren land, Khandavras and the Pandavas through their own hard work and through their own efforts created this whole beautiful city of Indraprastha. Obviously, he could not tolerate. Duryodhana could not tolerate that. So, and then he wanted a gambling match. He took away everything from them. And when they came back, they asked for 5 little villages. He was not even ready to give that. He said, I won't give you land which, where even a pin can be driven. So we see this whole Mahabharata is based on the envy that Duryodhana had towards the Pandavas, which is an expression, because here Rishabdev says every living entity we are envious towards is an expression of envy to God. Imagine envy towards the dearest devotees of the Lord. So Pandavas are the dearest devotees of Lord, and Duryodhana had so much envy in his heart towards the Pandavas. So that is why this whole war took place. So there is an epitome of envy who is standing on the opposite side. And here Krishna is telling Arjuna that you are the right patra to receive this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita because you are completely free from envy. So the qualification to hear the message of the Lord is that one has to have freedom from envy in his heart. Otherwise that message will not penetrate our hearts. And we see in the Bhagavatam also, very early in the Bhagavatam, in the first canto, I think in the second chapter, the verse is there, Nirmatsaranam Satam, where it is again clearly mentioned, Sukadeva Goswami is mentioning very clearly, that only one who is free from the quality of envy, or the anartha of envy in their heart, will actually be able to understand the depths of Srimad Bhagavatam. So, you know, both in Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, we see that very early on that is being stressed. Krishna is telling Arjuna, because you are free from envy, you can hear. And Bhagavatam is also stressing that only a person who is free from envy can hear this message. So, coming to the Bhoktaram Yajna Tapasam verse, there are three principles that we see in this particular verse, or three themes in that particular verse. So, one is Bhoktaram Yajna Tapasam Sarva Loka Maheshwaram. So, the first principle is that Sarva Loka Maheshwara means that the Lord is actually the supreme proprietor of everything. So if we, and then the second is Bhoktaram. Bhoktaram means he's the supreme enjoyer. And Suridam Sarva Bhutanam, that means he is the well-wisher and the friend of every living entity. So these three principles, if we understand very clearly, Krishna explains and again Prabhupada explains over there in the purport. If we understand these three principles clearly, and we don't have envy in our heart, then there will be peace in this world. But because there is no understanding of this principle in this world, we see there are so many conflicts arising out of envy of people's hearts, and therefore there is no peace in this world. Prabhupada calls this verse as a peace formula for the world. So coming to the first principle, the Sarva Loka Maheshwaram, so, which means that Krishna is the supreme proprietor. So when we say Krishna is the supreme proprietor of everything, he is not, he says Sarva Loka Maheshwaram. So we think, oh, he is the supreme proprietor of all planets, of all oceans, of all land that is there, of this earth. We try to think big, big, big. Oh, he is the proprietor of all the material world and the spiritual world. So that is true, yes, Krishna is the proprietor of all these things, but Krishna is also the proprietor of our bodies, our minds. He is also the proprietor of our intelligence and our abilities. That is also a recognition we have to have completely clearly in our heart, if we are to understand that yes, Krishna is the supreme proprietor of everything. So everything belongs to him, but the problem is that we want to claim it as our own. We want to claim proprietorship over things. And that is where we are expressing an enmity towards the Lord. We are denying that, subtly we are denying, although even as devotees, like conditioned devotees, speaking of especially myself, we recognize that yes, Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. But as soon as it comes to some abilities or some, you know, intelligence that we have, or maybe any powers or strength that is there, we subtly deny the existence of Krishna, or we subtly deny this proprietorship over this ability or this intelligence. And there we want to claim it as our own. And we see that in spiritual life also. Like, for example, you know, somebody has very good singing ability, or somebody has very good ability to dress deities, or somebody can give a good class, or somebody can cook really well, somebody does aarti and puja, shaligram worship really well. So everybody has different abilities. Somebody can write well, for example, for Krishna. So at least it is good. You know, the first step is yes, we recognize that they are utilizing this ability in the service of the Lord, which is the first step towards God consciousness. So that is a really good first step which a jiva takes, that he recognizes he has this ability, and instead of, you know, singing Bollywood songs or doing shows or you know, utilizing his cooking for maybe eating meat or whatever, cooking meat or eating meat or something like that, that ability is being utilized in the service of the Lord. However, the problem is once, you know, we even engage in this devotional service, envy can creep up over there as well in our own hearts. Because when we think, you know, we sing, let's say this 12-hour kirtan or 24-hour kirtan, and somebody has a slot to sing. So as soon as we finish singing and we get up, we actually hope that somebody will know you sang very well. Or when we, for example, see, you know, finish dressing the deities and we come out, we hope that somebody will appreciate that you dressed very well. So that is the thing which happens. We start subtly trying to crave for that credit that yes, I have done this. It was my ability because of which I was able to sing well, or because of which I was able to dress well, or I was able to cook well. Somebody has cooked a good feast. So, you know, we are subtly expecting that yes, somebody will come and appreciate that. Oh, you cooked so well. Oh, Prabhuji, aapke jaisa to koi hai nahi. So that is that subtle envy that comes in our heart. And where, you know, that expectation of credit or expectation of appreciation is actually denying that Krishna is a proprietor of that ability, or that, you know, Krishna has given that ability. You know, Sarva Loka Maheshwaram. We think big, 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 but when it comes to these little subtle things, we try to take credit, because that time we are forgetting that it is Krishna who has given us that ability. And therefore we see that, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he came, you know, in this world, Krishna came as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was so insistent, or he was so much propagating the philosophy or the quality of, or the value of Amani Namana Deva Kirtaniya Sadahari. In fact, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Maharaj used to say that this verse of Shikshashtakam should be worn by all Vaishnavas around their neck, like a dog wears a belt, like that is our belt. It's a recognition that we are a Vaishnava, that we don't want any respect, but we are offering all respects to others. So that stems from the Sarva Loka Maheshwaram verse, that we are recognizing that whatever I have is because of the Lord has given. He is the proprietor, and He has given me this ability, or He has given me this body, He has given me this voice, He has given me this intelligence, or He has given me these, you know, cooking ability, for example. So we fail to recognize that fact, and that is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to teach all of us, that do not expect respect, but just to give respect to everybody else in return. So, you know, like one of the antidotes of envy, which even in the ninth canto there is a verse when Lord Ramachandra's pastimes are there. Over there is a verse which says that one who carefully hears the entire narration of Ramayana and Lord Ram and Sita's pastimes, they will be free from the disease of envy. So one of the antidotes of envy is to hear and chant the Lord's glories very carefully. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also says that, you know, Amani na mandena kirtaniya sadahari. So once we have that thing in our mind that no, I don't want any respect for myself, only then can one constantly chant the holy names of the Lord. But what happens in a conditioned state, even in, on the path of spiritual life, is that, you know, we do some services, we expect somebody will appreciate, and that time that means what are we expecting? We are expecting that somebody, instead of singing Krishna's glories, they should sing my glories. So instead of, you know, Kirtaniya Sadahari, singing, you know, chanting the names of the Lord, we would like people to chant our names, exactly, that, you know, people are discussing, oh, that Mataji or this Rupji did that service so well. So we crave for that appreciation that, you know, and people singing our glories instead of singing Krishna's glories. So that is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very insist, like very, you know, pedantic about, or he was teaching that do not expect any return, any respect, because that will not take us closer to the lotus feet of Krishna. Because we are not recognizing Krishna's proprietorship that Krishna has given, that will, you know, that is an envy which we have towards him, which will not allow us to chant his name properly, not allow us to recognize his supreme feature. So we have to realize that it is the Lord who is doing everything, it is not me who is doing things. But when we do this, we also have to remember that from our side, we do not expect anything. Otherwise, we will fall down from a spiritual path. We are expecting appreciation. In fact, Srila Prabhupada says in many places in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the purport, he says that the definition of humility, because, you know, all of us write very nicely, your humble servant, or your aspiring servant, or your maid servant, like we, or your servant, whatever. We write that at the end of when we are sending messages or emails or something to each other. But it's very difficult to actually deeply recognize what is a servant. And, you know, it's not just, you know, folding hands and, you know, saying humbly that, oh, I will do and all that. But Prabhupada says that the definition of humility is to not expect appreciation or glorification. Or the ears are not eager to hear appreciation and glorification. That is the definition of humility, Prabhupada says in many places in the Bhagavatam. So for us, if we expect appreciation and glorification, it will lead to our fall down. However, on our part, if we do not appreciate and glorify other devotees, also it will lead to our fall down. So it is like a two-edged sword, where we definitely have to keep giving appreciation and glorify other devotees. But on the other hand, we should never expect glorification or appreciation. So once, you know, there was a, Radhanath Maharaj was giving a class, and there was a very senior devotee who was sitting in the audience. He's doing a lot of preaching, the Grahastha is doing a lot of preaching in IIT Mumbai. So Radhanath Maharaj was glorifying him in the class, sitting on the Vyasas, and imagine your guru is sitting and glorifying you. So he was profusely glorifying this devotee in the class, and he was saying that he is doing so much, he's donated his whole house in Mumbai for preaching. You know, they cook so much, so many people. Because in IIT, like big scale preaching has been banned since few years. So very undercover preaching has to be done. So that person had actually offers in America and all to, you know, get a good job, because he's from IIT himself. But he rejected that and became a professor at IIT only so that he can preach inside IIT, utilizing his whole house for preaching. So Maharaj was glorifying this devotee a lot. And at the end, that devotee asked a question to Maharaj. He said, Maharaj, you are sitting and glorifying me, so how should I take that glorification? Because obviously, you know, Prabhupada, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instruction is Amanina Manadeva Kirtaniya Sadahari. But here my guru is sitting on the Vyasasana and glorifying me continuously. So what should be my consciousness and how should I take it, Maharaj? And that time Maharaj replied to him. Maharaj said that if I don't glorify you for whatever devotional service and all the efforts that you are taking in preaching and all the austerities that you are performing just to bring people into Krishna consciousness, so if I don't recognize that and I don't glorify you, I will fall down, Maharaj told him. However, if you take this glorification which I just did for you, you take it to heart, you will fall down. So that is what, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is talking, that we don't expect respect or recognition for ourselves, but we are all the time recognizing others and giving them that respect. And that is where we will be truly able to imbibe this quality of Sarva Loka Maheshwaram, where we are recognizing that yes, Krishna, you are the supreme proprietor of everything, including all the abilities and intelligence that you have given me. So like I was saying, the antidote, you know, for envy is to chant and hear, obviously, chanting and hearing the glories of the Lord very attentively. That will definitely help us get rid of this quality, this anartha of envy, which is there in our heart. And another antidote of envy is to profusely appreciate devotees. So if we are, you know, always glorifying at devotees and we are always engaged in recognizing how devotees are doing such wonderful services for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that will help us get rid of this envy. Because we see in devotional circle, like once Devamrit Maharaj was giving a class here in Melbourne, and he made a very beautiful point. He was also talking about this quality of envy. And he said that usually envy is towards a person who has something better than us. So we might see that we have some, you know, ability, let's say a little ability to sing, probably, or a little ability to cook, or a little ability to do nice puja, or a little ability to dress. So we might have some of these little abilities, and as soon as we recognize we have this ability and we try to use that ability in the service of the Lord, which is a good thing, but as soon as we see somebody else comes and they have a better ability than us, and we see that probably they are being recognized more or they are doing that service much better than we do, then immediately that anartha of envy creeps up in the heart. So Devamrit Maharaj was saying that usually we will never feel envious of people who are lower than us. So a rich man will never feel envy of a poor person. What is there to envy? He has lesser than him anyway. In the same way, in terms of abilities also, in spiritual life, we will never feel envious of someone who is still struggling or who still, you know, who cannot sing well, for example, who is Besura. So we will never feel, a person who can sing will never feel envious of that person. Or somebody who is, you know, really strong sadhana, they can, you know, get up very early and chant in the morning, and a person who is still struggling to chant two rounds. One will never feel envious of such a person. But one will feel envious of a person who is doing little. Oh, I get up every day at 4 o'clock, is it? Nowadays I am getting up at 3 o'clock and chanting my rounds. So immediately then, you know, that envy will, because as soon as we see someone being a little better service than us or displaying a little better ability than us, that quality of envy comes up. And that time Devamrit Maharaj was saying that instead of thinking how, because envy is, you know, a desire in our mind that how that person should fall down from whatever he is doing. Because envy is very destructive. Again, you know, once Prabhupada was asked the difference between envy and jealousy. So quality of jealousy exists even in the spiritual world. There is so much jealousy between the left wing and the right wing gopis. In the spiritual world as well, who will serve Krishna better? Even in the gopas, who will serve Krishna better? Or I will today serve Krishna better? Or I will play a better game with Krishna? So like that jealousy is there. But the difference is that in jealousy, we are seeing someone is doing something better than us. We are recognizing that, we are appreciating that. And then we are saying that how can I also become like that or better than that so that Krishna's service becomes better. So that is healthy jealousy, where we are actually, everyone is striving, you know, competing with each other, but they are striving to serve the Lord better. But in envy, the envy is a very destructive quality. When we see envy, we are recognizing, yes, somebody is better than me, but we are thinking or we are desiring subtly that they should fall down from whatever they are doing, and so that I am recognized as the better person than them. So then if we are, you know, that subtle desire is that if somebody is, let's say, you know, doing more austerity, and then we see suddenly they are struggling to get up in the morning, and then others start to know, no, this person is only doing such nice sadhana, or in our mind we can see he's not able to do. He was saying, oh, bada bada baat kar raha tha, main 2:30 ko utha hu, 3 o'clock utha hu, but now see, where is he? So like that, you know, we might, that might give a certain pleasure to our mind that now he is not able to do, but see, I am so steady in my sadhana, I still get up at 4 o'clock every day and chant. So then envy, that envy is that destructive quality where we are subtly hoping that person will not do so well. Cooking, like one person cooks well, the other person is cooking well, but if there is envy, we might think, oh, his cooking shouldn't be as good as mine. But then what is happening in that is that we are actually wishing that he doesn't serve Krishna as well as he is doing. So that is what is envy. And Devamrit Maharaj was talking about this aspect in great detail. He was saying that envy means to desire that someone will not do so well in an ability which they have better than ours. But then, you know, we are actually hoping they will not serve Krishna well, which is destructive for devotional service. So he said, instead of that, it is good to recognize that yes, they have that ability, which a person, you know, in spiritual world where there is jealousy also they recognize. But then, you know, it is to go and appreciate. First of all, appreciate profusely, because that is an antidote to envy. If we feel that someone, and you know, all of us know what is in our hearts, but if we feel that someone, you know, someone's devotional service is a little bit disturbing us, for example, take the opportunity to go and glorify that person profusely, that you are doing so well, I am so inspired that you are doing so well. How do you do it? Dadati prati granati, guhyam akhyati prachati. Go and ask them, inquire from them how I can do also better service like you are doing, so that both of us serve Krishna nicely. So you are saying that turn it into appreciation and turn it into a quality where you want to also do well, so that both of you are progressing together in Krishna consciousness. That is what Devangat Maharaj was talking about, envy, like from a destructive quality, make it into a constructive quality where you are not hoping for the downfall of the person whom we are envious of. So that is one aspect where, you know, we are not recognizing the proprietorship of the Lord on our abilities, and that express comes out as an expression of envy towards our fellow devotees. The second theme which is there, or the second principle which is spoken about in the Bhoktaram Yagya Tapasam verse, is Bhoktaram. Bhoktaram Yagya Tapasam means I am the supreme enjoyer of everything that is there in this world. That is what the second principle which Krishna is talking about. So when we say I am the supreme enjoyer, that means everything in this world, whether it is material objects, whether it is spiritual objects, whether it is senses, everything is meant for the pleasure of Krishna. But again we see that we are trying to compete with Krishna. There also we have envy. So Krishna actually says, Rishikena Rishikeso Sevanam Bhakti Ruchyate, says in the Nectar of Devotion. Utilize your senses for the service of the master or the proprietor of the senses, Rishikena Rishikesho. He is the master or the proprietor of the senses. Utilize your senses to serve him well. But we are competing with Krishna where we are actually wanting our senses to serve us well. We want, you know, nice things to see, we want to hear nice music, but we are, you know, we are straying ourselves away from the path of Krishna's enjoyment or Krishna's pleasure. So that is the second verse, and that is what is meant by sacrifice. So sacrifice means recognizing that Krishna is the enjoyer, I am not the enjoyer, giving up our sense enjoyment so that we can give pleasure to Krishna, which we see the highest manifestation in the Brajavasis. They absolutely don't want anything for their own pleasure. Everything is for the pleasure of Krishna. You know, even that whole pastime which is there of Gopi Chandan, that also demonstrates that quality of the Brajavasis, where they are not even caring, especially in the Gopis, they don't even care if they go to hell, if it can relieve Krishna's headache for a few minutes. So that is the second aspect, the second principle of our display of envy towards Krishna, where we don't recognize him as the supreme enjoyer, but we want everything for our enjoyment. My house is for my enjoyment, the Lakshmi that I'm earning is for my enjoyment, my senses are for my enjoyment, my tongue is for my enjoyment. And therefore Prabhupada came to give us this purification process. That is why he opened these big temples and all. Because once Prabhupada, you know, he was being interviewed, and Prabhupada was sitting in a nice quarters which had been created for Prabhupada, made for Prabhupada by his disciples. And one interviewer asked him, reporter asked him, he said that why are you building such big temples and so many opulent things and all that? Why do you require such big facilities? So Prabhupada said like two things he was stressing. One is that if I am happy to sit under a tree and, you know, I'll be happy to preach from there, but will you come to interview me there if I'm just sitting under a tree? Today, because I have this institution, I have these big temples, that is why you are coming to interview me in this big temple. So that was one answer which Prabhupada gave. Because we all know that Prabhupada was very happy living in that simple room. Whenever we go to Vrindavan, we all go to take darshan of that simple room of Prabhupada in the Radha Damodar temple. And Prabhupada was perfectly happy over there. But we see that Prabhupada went out of that room and Prabhupada, you know, made all these beautiful temples. So the second thing which Prabhupada stressed was that the goal of our movement is just to chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra purely. That is the whole goal. In fact, you know, it said that 99% of our spiritual progress comes from the quality of our chanting. The remaining 1%, which is all the services we do, that is the remaining 1%. Anything that we do, you know, from reading, cooking, whatever services, devotional services we do, any practical devotional services, that constitutes only 1% of our spiritual life. Whereas 99% spiritual progress comes from the quality of chanting. So Prabhupada says that the goal of this whole movement is set so that we chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra purely and go back to Godhead. However, because in Kali Yuga people's minds are so disturbed, they will not be able to sit in one place and chant. And therefore I have created all these big institutions these big temples, book distribution have, you know, inculcated all these programs, deity worship, so that everyone's senses can be utilized in the service of the Lord. Because for a conditioned soul in Kali Yuga, where Mandasumanda Matayo, the minds are very disturbed, it is hard for a person to just sit and chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So Prabhupada also recognized that, and therefore he created this institution with so many services for all of us, so that we can utilize our senses, Rishikena Rishikesho. We can utilize our senses for the pleasure of the Lord. We are actively pursuing devotional service by giving some, you know, activity to our senses. Otherwise our senses are going to drag us in different directions, making us forget that Bhoktaram Yajna Tapasam, that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer of our senses. So that is the second principle. And the third principle which is talked about in that verse is Suridam Sarva Bhutanam. So Suridam Sarva Bhutanam means Krishna is actually saying that I am the friend and the well-wisher of every living entity. I know what is best for them, and sitting as Paramatma in their heart, I will guide them accordingly in this material world, and I will give them what they desire if they deserve it and if it is good for them. So that is a well-wisher and a true friend. He will not give anything that, you know, somebody wants, but he will only give it to the person if that is good for that person. So that is what is Krishna's role. However, we see that people who generally are in the mode of goodness, you know, who try to do good things for others by, you know, opening big institutions, they like to help others, they have a very charitable disposition. They want to open big hospitals, or we see in India especially there are many orphanages which they have been opened for by them, or there are some old age homes like ashrams, vridhashrams, which are opened by them. Lot of food distribution they will do. So many people are there like that, who are very charitable and, you know, very benevolent by nature. Their disposition is always to help others. But the problem is that even in that mode of goodness, there is envy that comes up. And how does that come up? Srila Prabhupada explains that once they have done that charity, or once, let's say, they open some institution, you will see if you enter such an institution, you know, there will be an idol of that person right at the center. This, you know, institution or this hospital has been opened because of the kind donation of so-and-so, and even, you know, we say the putla of that person as soon as you enter. So that is because everybody who is in the mode of goodness, trying to benefit others, there is that always that desire in their heart that I, you know, or not desire, but that feeling in their heart that, see, I have helped this person, or I am helping so many poor people, I am their well-wisher. What would they have done if I would not have given charity? So that feeling is there that I am the well-wisher and I am the benefactor of all these suffering people, and that feeling is also actually an expression of the Lord, even though it's in the mode of goodness. Because Krishna is the ultimate friend and the well-wisher of everybody. Who am I to become anybody's benefactor or anybody's well-wisher? So over there, you know, again Prabhupada says that the activity is in the mode of goodness, and definitely the mode of goodness is the platform from which it acts like a springboard for someone to go into transcendental goodness or pure goodness. However, Prabhupada says that the consciousness one has to be very careful of. It should not seep in one's consciousness that all this is happening only because of me. And if, you know, if this wouldn't have happened, what, or if I wouldn't have done this, what would have happened of these poor suffering people? So that is also an expression of envy, where we are not recognizing that ultimately Krishna is the well-wisher. And Krishna is actually inspiring me. Whatever I am giving to others is the property of Krishna, he is the proprietor. I am just utilizing my hands as an instrument to distribute whatever Krishna has given me. That is what Prabhupada says will help us get rid of that envy, where I am thinking I am the doer, oh, because of me this particular project happened, or because of me this particular thing happened. That is the consciousness of envy which can even come up for people in the mode of goodness, where they are not recognizing that Krishna is the well-wisher. So in spiritual life especially, we have to be extremely careful about this quality of envy. And if we are very, you know, diligent, and we are very careful about following these three principles, that Krishna is the supreme proprietor, all my abilities are because of him, he is the supreme enjoyer. Whatever sense gratification I am trying to do, is my senses are actually meant for the pleasure of Krishna, and doing that sacrifice or austerity, and also recognizing that he is the well-wisher. I am not the benefactor of anybody in this world. He is the well-wisher of everybody. He is the true friend of every living entity. So if these three principles we are very careful in following, it will help us slowly rise above this quality of envy that can come up in our heart, in spiritual life also. So like Rishabhdev is saying over here, that, you know, when people, for example, especially in lockdown, when, you know, we were not allowed to come into the temple, we would see sometimes devotees would do parikrama of the temple, or from far away, whenever we see a temple, we bow down like this. And that is what Prabhupada is explaining in the purport. That when we see a temple, even from a distance, we bow down and offer respects. But that is the same feeling we have to have towards every living entity. Because everybody has Paramatma in their heart. And what is a temple? A temple is where the Lord is there, where the deities of the Lord is there. So in the same way, Prabhupada is, you know, opening our eyes to recognize the fact that every person in this material world is also actually a temple. Because the Paramatma is residing in everybody's heart. And therefore he says, do not have envy towards any jivas, because just as you offer respect to even a temple from far away, in the same way offer respect to every jiva in this material or in this world, because they have the Paramatma living in their heart. So we see that, you know, other religions, when we talk about other religions, we see that, you know, the dharma, artha, kama. We spoke about how Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, there is a qualification of being nirmat saranam satam, freedom from envy, so that we can understand Bhagavatam. And Bhagavatam very early on rejects Kaitava dharma, any cheating religion. The goal of Bhagavatam is very pure, to establish irrevocable devotion service in the heart of every jiva in this world who is taking shelter of the Srimad Bhagavatam. But if you see other religions or other parts of spirituality, you know, so-called parts of spirituality, they are promoting dharma, artha, kama. And that is also an expression of envy, where we are telling Krishna, what is the purpose of so many, you know, we see yajnas and pujas and all that being done. The purpose is that, you know, Devi, Devi, Devi. You know, even that Jai Jagdish Hare song is there. Over there also, the whole song is about how the Lord should give us things. So sometimes we think that the Lord is our cosmic bellboy. Like just in hotel, there are bellboys and we ring a bell and they will come and we say, oh, can you bring water? Then they'll go and bring water, or, you know, we do room service and they might bring some room service for us. So we think Krishna is our cosmic bellboy that is free of cost. In hotel, you have to pay that bellboy for whatever services we are taking in the hotel. But we think Krishna is a cosmic bellboy. Through all these pujas and yajnas and, you know, homams and all that people do, especially to demigods, we are just asking them for more and more and more. Give me this, give me wealth, give me son, give me education, take away this disease, give me a healthy body. So by doing this, every time, you know, praying like this, we are actually telling Krishna that you make me the proprietor more and more of things and let me be the enjoyer more and more of things. So we are actually telling Krishna that I am, you know, the proprietor and I am the enjoyer. Through these prayers, instead of coming closer to Krishna, we are more and more expressing our envy to Krishna. And that is what different religions actually promote. All these, you know, yajnas which the Mrityunjay Yajna Homam we hear of, or, you know, some homams which are done for the good health of people. So through all these homams and these pujas, or if you see outside Siddhi Vinayak, like Ganpati temple on a Tuesday, everyone is standing there because everyone wants some desire in their heart to be fulfilled. They want a son, they want a daughter, they don't have a child, somebody doesn't have a job, somebody is suffering from health, some disease is there, so we come to pray for the disease. So everyone is coming there to express to Krishna how I should be the proprietor and enjoyer of whatever you are going to give me. But Bhagavatam from the outset is actually rejecting all these cheating religions. And Bhagavatam is saying that only people who are free from this envy can understand the depths of Srimad Bhagavatam, the goal of which is to establish a devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Srimad Bhagavatam explains to us, like, you know, these other religions actually propagate us on the path of creating more and more envy towards the Lord. But Srimad Bhagavatam, on the other hand, is actually helping us in getting rid of this anartha of envy. So again, you know, going back to the first and second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, very early on, there are some beautiful verses which Sukadeva Goswami speaks to Parikshit Maharaj, which talk about how one can get rid of this envy from the heart completely. So we see there is a beautiful verse which is there in the Bhagavatam early on, which says, Srimatam Svakatha Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Ridahantosti Abhadrani Vidunoti Surat Satam. Ridahantosti Abhadrani. Abhadrani means everything which is inauspicious, all the anarthas that are there in the heart. Srimatam Svakatha Krishna. By continuously hearing Krishna Katha, everything that is there, the all these inauspicious qualities that are there in the heart, we will be able to get rid of them. So that is what the Bhagavatam is saying. And you know, in the same chapter, further on the verses, their famous verse, Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Again, Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu. All the inauspicious qualities in your heart, they will be Nashta, or they will get destroyed. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. By carefully hearing the message of Srimad Bhagavatam and the glories of the Supreme Lord through the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. So these are some of the antidotes or some of the cures for envy which Srimad Bhagavatam is teaching us, as compared to other religions which actually teach us how to become more envious of the Lord by asking more, 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 give me more, give me more. So we see that by sincerely chanting and hearing, taking shelter of the holy name of the Lord, taking shelter of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is non-different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we are able to at least recognize that yes, there is envy in my heart, because that is the first step. Prabhupada says, otherwise some people are so proud that they are not even able to recognize that they have this envy. So the first step in, you know, spiritual advancement is to recognize that yes, I do suffer from this disease of envy, because that will help us come one step closer to then finding out a cure for this envy, which is then the Srimad Bhagavatam is giving us, that how through daily deep study of the Srimad Bhagavatam it will help us get rid of this quality of envy. And we see there are many other forms of transcendence which are there in this world. Like people practice Kundalini Yoga, where you know they are raising the chakra through their spinal cord. Or people practice, you know, deep meditation, sitting down and meditating on the Om sound, or sitting and meditating on the light, like Bindu which is there, like some of the Brahma Kumaris do. So there are many other processes, or Ashtanga Yoga, very difficult Ashtanga Yoga some people do. So these processes will definitely give sense control. They might help a person to have control over their senses, where they are detached from gratifying their own senses. However, these processes do not enable a person to actually get rid of envy from their heart. They do not purify the heart and soften the heart, or take one person on the path of devotional service. So therefore, you know, again a beautiful verse is there in the Bhagavatam, Kechit Kevalaya Bhaktya Vasudeva Parayana Agam Dhunmanti Karsneya Niharam Eva Bhaskara. So it says that completely the Srimad Bhagavatam and devotional service to the Supreme Lord, hearing, chanting, you know, these aspects of devotional service to the Lord will completely uproot the weeds of anarthas from the heart without any possibility of them ever coming up again. So we see when, you know, people do weeding, you know, people have backyards and gardens and all, and they remove the weeds from their garden, but again they come up because the roots are still there inside the soil. But hearing of the Bhagavatam and devotional service, it is said, that is the only purifying process which not only uproots the weeds but completely burns them, so that there is no chance of them ever coming out again. Just as the sun burns, you know, bad odor and all that in this world. So again, we are seeing that that is one more way in which, you know, Kundalini Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga, all these yogic processes will help people in sense control, but they will never help them in getting rid of this, you know, these anarthas in their heart and purifying their heart of these anarthas, which only the hearing of Bhagavatam and only the devotional process can give us. So envy can be the greatest threat. Like why Prabhupada stresses so much about envy, and why Krishna also stresses so much? Because it can be a great threat, especially to our spiritual life. So I was listening to a class yesterday by a senior sannyasi, and he was saying that when devotees come together, but if they are not utilizing the association of each other to uplift each other's consciousness, but there is mundane, you know, talks going on, or there is prajalpa or gossip going on amongst devotees, definitely there will be envy that will creep up amongst devotees, and it will lead to conflict, relationships breaking apart and all that. So as, you know, and even in the fourth canto, which we just finished a few months ago, over there the pastime of the Prachetas is there. And one of the verses in that pastime, the Prachetas are saying that as long as, you know, the devotees of the Lord or transcendentalists are coming together and discussing pastimes of the Lord, or discussing how to better service to the Supreme Personality of God and uplift each other's, how to have better sadhana, till that time, the anartha of envy cannot be present in that particular assembly. That is what the Prachetas are also saying in the fourth canto. So, you know, that sannyasi was warning that when we come together,
we sometimes are, you know, we social talks or harvest people's jobs and all that going on. So we actually talk about all that, and we are not discussing enough Srimad Bhagavatam or the glories of the Lord or each other's sadhana or reading or uplifting each other in Krishna consciousness, definitely the anartha of envy will come up. So, you know, remembering what the Pachetas are saying, that till the time we are discussing, it will keep envy at bay and it will keep relationships good amongst devotees. So, to keep up that love and trust, because Prabhupada always said that ISKCON will never be broken from outside. It will only be broken from inside. When, you know, devotees are having conflicts with each other, they are not having loving relationships with each other, and envy can be a very great detriment to developing loving relationships with devotees. Because we might think that why I should recognize that person. Somebody has been made, you know, let's say, in charge of a certain service, but somebody else does not recognize that that person should be in charge of that service, then there will be no cooperation. You might think, why I should, and that is envy, why I should recognize him or his position. Who is he to tell me what I have to do, or who is he to tell me how I have to do my service? So we might not recognize that person out of envy, and that can lead to non-cooperation amongst devotees, and it can actually break ISKCON from within, which is, you know, what was Prabhupada's concern. So the sannyasi was talking a lot about that particular theme. And now coming, you know, to the second theme which is being discussed in this particular purport, is about the theme of Mayavadi, which is Prabhupada's favorite theme. Like whenever he gets an opportunity, he talks about, he tries to smash the Mayavad philosophy. So that is why Prabhupada is quoting Madhvacharya very like twice he's quoted Madhvacharya in this purport. Because the whole purpose of Madhvacharya's descent in this material world was to actually smash or to actually completely negate the Mayavad philosophy and to establish Dvaitava, which is duality, that the Lord is separate and the Jiva is separate, and the purpose of the Jiva or the goal of the Jiva's life is to serve the Lord. The occupational duty of a living entity is devotional service to the Supreme Lord. That is what Madhvacharya came to establish. And therefore, if you see, Madhvacharya is being quoted over here, that anyone who preaches that the Lord is different and the Jiva is different is very dear to the Lord. So Mayavad is the last snare of Maya in terms of our expression of envy. Because if we see Mayavadis, or even atheists for that matter, or especially, you know, speaking about the Mayavadis, they are also transcendentalists. If you go, you know, to any, you know, Shankaracharya followers, they also have a lot of sense control. Like, in fact, they might have much better sense control than some struggling devotees or struggling spiritualist devotees. So they have sense control. They also know the goal of the human form of life is not eating, sleeping, mating, defending. They also know, you know, that meat should not be eaten, for example. So all these basic principles, they are also all following really well. But the problem is that, you know, like for example, if we take the trajectory of an aircraft, so when over, you know, an aircraft which is, let's say, traveling from India to Australia or India to America or Europe or somewhere, over that long distance, if the aircraft sways even by 1 degree, over that, you know, long distance, it can actually take the aircraft into a completely different country away from their destination. So we see that even with Mayavadis, even though the process of sense control, detachment from sense gratification, detachment from this world, you know, utilizing the human form of life for its purpose, which is to, you know, not just work like asses and dogs in this material world. So that all is even there in the Mayavad philosophy. Very strictly they follow all these aspects of transcendence. However, that 1 degree variation is there. Their goal is that, you know, I will become the Lord. By doing all these processes, I will become the Lord instead of I becoming a servant of the Lord and serving Him. So that is the last snare of Maya. You know, that is also an expression of envy, where we are not recognizing that yes, the Supreme Lord is a person, separate person who has a form and who eternally exists, and it is my duty as a Jiva to serve Him. So that is the second expression of envy which Prabhupada is talking about in this particular purport. And even atheists, now, you know, in Prabhupada always used to ask, I was listening to a lecture once again, and Prabhupada always, that speaker was quoting, that Prabhupada, any transcendentalist who used to visit Prabhupada would always ask that transcendentalist, that what is the goal of this path that you are following? Because one transcendentalist was speaking to a preacher, and the preacher was talking to him and asking that, because that particular person used to do a lot of meditation. Hours and hours of strict meditation he used to do in front of a deity.
And he used to do strict meditation for asanas. And this preacher asked him that what is the goal, like what are you trying to achieve through this meditation? And he said that through my power, the power which I get through this meditation, I want that one day this day idol will explode. Through the power of my meditation. So that was the goal he was aiming for, that the idol should explode. What is he going to get if that idol explodes? What has he realized in life? Except that, you know, somebody's hard work, whoever must have carved that idol, his hard work has gone down the drain. So that is how we see, you know, people do not recognize the supreme position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and they concoct all these various ways, meditations and, you know, Kundalini yogas and Ashtanga yogas and all that. And everybody has a different goal, but they forget that the goal is to serve the Lord. So in Russia also we see, you know, devotees have been struggling to build a temple in Russia. Since so many years that struggle is going on with the Russian government. So it was said that, you know, at one point in time the devotees were actually, you know, propagating that we want to build a temple and trying to establish this Hare Krishna movement. The Orthodox people who were there in Russia, they were vehemently opposed to the Hare Krishnas coming into Russia and starting their centers and temples and all that. So they actually, what they did was, they went and studied the Bhagavad Gita very carefully, these Orthodox people. And they saw that in the 10th chapter, you know, the 10th chapter is there, the opulence of the Absolute, where Krishna is talking about, I am this, of all months I am Margashisha, of all letters I am Om, of all sounds I am Om, like that, you know, he is talking about different opulences. So Krishna over there says that of all demons I am Prahlad. He says that in the Bhagavad Gita. And these Orthodox Russians who were opposed to the Hare Krishnas, they went to the court and they told the judge that see, these people are actually demon worshippers. Their God is only saying in Bhagavad Gita, in this particular scripture which they follow, that I am a demon. Without realizing what is Prahlad Maharaj's position, you know, the Orthodox people were fighting like this. So we see that, you know, this atheism, denying the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is also an expression of envy or Mayavad philosophy, where people are following the path of transcendence, but they are ultimately, the goal is that, you know, there is no God and I can become God, or I am God or one, you know, I like that fellow was saying that one day I will, this idol will explode and it will be me sitting over there. That was his goal. So that is the second theme which we see in this particular purport, Prabhupada is saying, where, you know, he is talking that Maya philosophy or atheism, both are an expression of envy to the Lord. We are not recognizing that the Supreme Lord exists or His form exists. And we see mostly atheists, if you see, go and speak to most of the atheists, some are very kattar, or we say, like, you know, stubborn, but most of the atheists become atheists because, you know, like we say, most of the other religions are promoting dharma, artha, kama, where they are actually saying, Devi, Devi, give me this, give me that. So this person might have gone and, you know, prayed to the Lord. Some puja he might have done or something like that. Or some big yajna he might have done to get something. Now maybe it was not in his karma to get. He did not deserve to get that particular thing. And that desire was not fulfilled. Because the Lord is Suridam Sarva Deyan. He is the supreme well-wisher and friend. So if that person did not deserve this and it was not in their karma, the Lord is not going to give it to them. And if you speak to an atheist, they will usually say that, oh, tum log bolte ho, you all are saying Lord is there, God is there, and He is there for all our troubles and miseries and all that. I went and prayed but I did not get it, so therefore there is no God. Because He did not come and fulfill my wish. So again, not recognizing that there is a Lord. So that is also envy towards the Lord. So atheism and Mayavad, both philosophies, are actually an expression again of envy to the Lord. Failing to recognize that the Supreme Lord exists or His form exists, and that the duty, like Madhavacharya says, that the duty of the jiva is to go and serve that Lord. So these are the two themes we say over here, that, you know, and therefore, you know, Vaishnavism is actually the true nature. It's not even a philosophy. It's a true nature of the soul. Because Vaishnavism is the sect which, or is the spiritual path which talks about how the Lord exists and how my duty is to serve the Lord eternally. So Vaishnavism, you know, what Madhavacharya, Ramanujacharya, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all of them came to establish was that yes, the form of the Lord is there and your duty is always to serve that particular form. So that is what is Vaishnavism. It's a recognition of the true nature of the soul. So these are the two themes we see coming up over here. One is envy towards jivas and how we can come up in spiritual life, and also envy towards the Lord through Mayavad and atheism. We left the class here and Are there any comments, corrections, questions? That is a question which has been asked in this con so many times, Sanjay.
It's a classic.
Yeah, this is a classic ISKCON question, that why did we come and why, how come there was envy in the spiritual world. So some of the you know, lectures that I've heard and the understanding that I have developed is that, first of all, you know, in the spiritual world, we came down because we say we got envious of Krishna, and we were thinking why he should be enjoying when I should enjoy. But there cannot be two enjoys in the spiritual world, so Krishna created this material world so that we can satisfy our so-called proclivity to enjoy. But in the spiritual world, it is actually, the understanding which is given is that actually, you know, for a moment we closed our eyes and we are actually saying that, oh, what it would be like to enjoy like Krishna. And then that moment we come to the material world and we spend millions and millions and millions of lifetimes before we come back to other realization. So for some people that moment can be a bit longer, for some it can be very short, where they quickly realize that what is their position and how, you know, I should not try to enjoy separately from Krishna, because we can see what sufferings you can go through, because the material world is designed to embarrass us, or it's designed to actually frustrate us. So we see in that one moment how many lifetimes we go through and what all frustrations we go through, and we come back to the realization that, you know, doodh ka daja chhas food ke pita is, you know, a person who is burned by milk will also blow on the buttermilk and drink because his tongue got burned by the milk. So like that, we realize that what will happen if we, I think that I want to, what will it be like to separate the enjoy from Krishna. We realize what frustrations and miseries we can go through, and therefore we come back to our senses and we then never get the desire once again. So that is what is there in this, in terms of why we came down and how we express that we want to be. So it was more like if a father is driving a car and the son says that I also want to drive the car, but he doesn't deserve to drive the car right now because it's not safe for him to drive the car. So the father might take him to, you know, go-karting or something like that, or those virtual games where he will, you know, give him the feeling that he is driving the car. So that is exactly what Krishna has done for all of us. Now in terms of the Kumaras, yes, you know, when the Kumaras came to the gates and they told Jai Vijay that you are seeing duality which should not exist in Vaikuntha, and therefore you are not fit to be here in Vaikuntha, you should be in the material world. So actually, if we see, Jai and Vijay are pure devotees, otherwise why would they be eternal gate servants, gatekeepers of the Lord? But that time, you know, there is again, the explanation is given by Acharyas is that it was the Lord who desired to fight, and that is why this whole pastime got enacted where the Kumaras became an instrument of cursing Jai and Vijay so that they would come down as Ravana, Kumbhakarna, or, you know, Kamsa, all these things, Shishupal, Dantamukha, like that, they would come down and the Lord would be able to then satisfy his desire, chivalrous rasa which he was saving. Because who can satisfy the Lord chivalrous rasa apart from his own devotees? So over there actually it was a pastime, even though the Kumaras are speaking that, you know, you all have envy, you all are seeing duality and all that, but it was actually an enactment of the Lord's pastime where everyone was playing a role. So when you are playing a role, it might, you know, visibly outside appear that you are displaying envy, but internally you are just acting as an instrument of the Lord. So for acting as an instrument of the Lord, just as Bhishma Pitama, we see, he was on the other side, he was fighting on the Kaurava's side, and we know he is one of the Mahajans and he is such a great devotee of the Lord. So he was forever, eternally he was ready to take that blemish on his character that he fought on the side of the Kauravas. He did not fight on the right side only because the Lord and he had chivalrous rasa. So if they are, unless they are opposite each other, how can they exchange that chivalrous rasa? So he was ready to take. So whenever the Lord's desire is to be satisfied, the devotees are ready to go to any length, whether they are seen as egregious persons or they are seen as people who did not side with the right but they sided with the wrong. The pure devotees of the Lord are ready to go that extra mile. They don't care then if they are displaying envy externally, just because the Lord's desire needs to be satisfied. So that is the understanding which has been given about the Kumara's pastime. Anything else? Okay, we'll end the class here. Grantha Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.